Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ellington missed it. Rebound to the leaping White. Second chance for the Heat. White was tripped by Bogut, who got tangled up, boy, on the ankle.
Oh, boy.
Down in a heap. And Andrew's just been injury plagued throughout his career since that horrific fall with Milwaukee about 6 years ago. I don't know if he was kicked there. Did you tell?
Oh, yeah.
The knee, right to the shin. Yeah.
Right to his shin.
Man. I mean, that's just bad luck there. So Bogut just 2 minutes into his camp stint.
I think it's my shin.
All the way here. Nothing on this leg.
I don't like the fact he can't put weight on it.
I can't get to break.
It's very deflected. Tough moment. You know, we all were excited, you know, about the acquisition and bringing him here. And, you know, him getting some games under his belt, you know, before the playoffs. A tough one, not only, obviously, for him, first of all, you know, and then for our ball club.
Like on TV that he had maybe told you and some other guys while he was going off the floor that he thought it was broken.
Is
that,
I heard it.
You heard the injury?
Yeah. I heard it. I heard a crack.
Understanding how excited he was to be here kind of took the wind out of our sails a little bit because I think he knew right away. And we're just hoping that he gets better. Hey, it's just terrible, man.
Reggie floats it up, fills it up. They trim the lead to 10. Reggie with a crossover, and he fires, and he fills it up. Reggie from the corner. He hits it.
Defense was there, but it didn't matter. Reggie Jackson.
Reggie knocks another one down. Look out.
Shots are just dropping. Teammates doing a great job setting screens. Their coverage has allowed for us to play a two-man pick-and-roll game. I was just a beneficiary of great ball movement, great spacing, a great defensive effort tonight.
It was certainly efficient 10 for 10 in the second half from the floor. I mean, you know, it didn't get much better than that. Yeah, he finished that up damn well.
Here is the drive and a find for Loft, right corner. Three ball is good. Back to West, left side, working on Navigato. One dribble, pull up, got it for two. West to Alsager, 14-10, Toledo. Back to the middle to Alsager. Shoots over Navigato on the dribble and shoots and scores. West Alsager getting in a rhythm. John Williams bounces it to Sanford, left corner. His three ball is good. Here's Fry with a shot topside for three, and it's good. And he shows the three to the crowd. Dylan Fry, that little step left triple, and we're tied. Williams brings it out top, shoots a long three, and fills it up. Alsager contested, but a little bit late. And Toledo by four. Rockets get it in, and right away go to Kanapke inside. He works around Alsager, counts the basket, and the foul. Left side for John Williams. Skips it over to the right corner. Loft, catch and shoot, triple. Got it. Off the inbound, the Rockets get it to Williams on an out-of-bounds underplay. Taylor found him for a layup. Now Taylor feeds it inside to Loft, working against Fry. He scores low on the right, and a foul. Williams, Toledo, gets it to Navigato. Missed the dunk. Loose ball. Loft has it for Toledo. Got it to Williams underneath. Shot fake. Goes up and under. It scores. Caldwell to the lane, to the rim, and good. Nobody stepped in. 61-42. Rockets starting to pull away. Now Williams again launches late in the clock and fills it up at the right point. And that is going to do it.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed. Welcome to the extravaganza right here on The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader. What's going on? Hope you're having a great Tuesday afternoon. How about MACtion underway? MAC tournament action, of course, as well as all of the conference tournament action. We got teams already punching their tickets, going to the big dance. But for the MAC, of course, it just started last night. Toledo and Bowling Green going at it, renewing the I-75 rivalry in tournament play this time around, and it was really no contest all the way through. It was the Toledo Rockets you just heard there at the end of the montage. But we have a lot of other things to get on the table for discussion this afternoon right here that was also in the montage, including the Detroit Pistons, a nice win over the Chicago Bulls. They trailed that game at halftime, came out in the second half, and just really took it to the Bulls, winning their second straight, which is, of course, good news. They've just been so inconsistent with a win, a loss, two wins, two losses, and up and down we go. It's just the way that it's been really for the last few weeks for the Detroit Pistons. So two wins in a row against Philly, And now the Bulls, they've got the Pacers coming up tomorrow night. They do indeed have tonight off. So nice win for the Pistons. As you just heard, Reggie Jackson came out and scored 24 of his 26 in the second half of that game. But the biggest NBA story last night did not come in the Pistons and the Bulls game. The biggest NBA story last night didn't even come, although it's very, very close, in the showdown between two of the Western Conference powers, the team with the second-best record in the West, the Spurs, taking on the third-best team in the West, the Houston Rockets. A couple of MVP candidates going at it, you know, I won't say mano a mano because they didn't guard each other, but just trading big plays with one another. James Harden of the Houston Rockets and Kawhi Leonard of the Spurs. What a tremendous finish for Kawhi Leonard, who's got a lot of people talking now about this, you know, crashing this two-man party for the MVP of the NBA. You know, almost everybody, except for those who really want to, you know, get into the technical thing about who's the best player, not necessarily who's having the best season. But when it comes to the NBA's MVP award, it's a two-man race for most folks. It's Russell Westbrook and it's James Harden, both of whom are doing ridiculous things to the stat sheets night after night after night. And the only other names really to be thrown into that conversation are LeBron James, because he's always in the conversation. Kevin Durant, but he went down with an injury, so he's not going to push on that anymore. And Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard last night may have made a statement, that's especially because it came against one of the two guys that are in that MVP conversation, with a three-point dagger. A dagger to give his team the lead in the closing seconds, and then a block on the other end of, you guessed it, James Harden, who tried to beat everybody back down the floor on just a lightning quick move from one end of the floor to the other, driving for a left-handed layup to reclaim the lead. Kawhi Leonard blocked it with his left hand. It looked LeBron-esque in the finals against Andre Iguodala. I mean, it was just that impressive. And then after a rebound block by LaMarcus Aldridge, it was Leonard who secured the next rebound and got fouled and went down and hit a couple of free throws as well to put up a very efficient 39 points on 12 out of 18 shooting. Just a remarkable filled stat sheet for Kawhi Leonard. And you know what? That conversation is one that we should have. Where does he find himself in this MVP race with roughly, what, 20 games to go for most of these teams based on where we are? It's a conversation worth having. Kawhi Leonard may have played not just last night, of course, but last night was his 23rd 30-plus point game this season. And that's not something that Kawhi Leonard has been about. You know, big scoring nights in his previous years of being a first-team All-NBA guy, of being a first-team All-NBA defensive guy, of being a defensive player of the year twice. He hasn't been noted as a very, you know, explosively scoring offensive player. Well, he's being noted now because he's averaging 26.3 points per game, is Kawhi Leonard. And that 26.3 points per game is on very, very efficient shooting at 48% field goal shooting. He is a 90% shooter from the foul line, which puts him way above some of the other guys in these categories. He's averaging 6 rebounds a game, as well as 4 assists a game. He is just a very, very, and not to mention being probably, again, the leading contender for the NBA's Defensive Player of the Year Award. For a team that, by the way, at 49-13, may be poised to overtake the Golden State Warriors, who are now minus Kevin Durant, for top team in the Western Conference, and thus top team in the NBA, and thus, you know, the home court advantaged team all the way through the Western Conference Finals, and is whether or not they can make it to the NBA Finals. So he's doing all of these things on one of the best teams in the NBA, and he just doesn't get enough respect. He doesn't get enough pub. He's not flashy. He's not talkative. He doesn't have a cool nickname like King James. He doesn't have the triple-double stat machine thing going like the way Russell Westbrook does. But Kawhi Leonard may just have broken through, you know, the realm of second-tier top players in the NBA behind, like, the Big Five. And if you have a Big Five, it probably varies. You know, mine would probably include LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, probably James Harden, and probably, boy, I don't know, Anthony Davis, maybe. And Kawhi Leonard's in that. Kawhi Leonard certainly is above AD, I think, in that discussion. That's something we should talk about. You know, the true, real big five. Steph Curry, to me, has taken a step back this season. Not necessarily because Durant is there, because Durant's just a better player. But he himself just isn't himself. So you're talking about a guy in Kawhi Leonard who has pushed himself into the conversation to being among the best players in the league, if not the best player in the league, and if not the MVP of this league. But that's still not the biggest story to come out of the National Basketball Association last night. It was, of course, the arrival and the departure of Andrew Brokut from the for the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's right, Andrew Brokut is his new name. It is not Bogut, it is Brokut, because he was on the court for all of 58 seconds before he broke it, being, of course, his leg. Andrew Brokut's fractured tibia less than a minute into his Cavaliers debut likely will be his Cavaliers swan song all at the very same time. They're probably not going to bring him back next year. He's obviously done for the year this year. There are no words. Cushlin, help me out with this. Jim Cushlin with us, as almost always here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket and the Extravaganza. I can't think of a word to describe how shocking this was. And shocking would be one, but it would be very plain and vanilla and blasé. We need better words to describe. Andrew Bogut's arrival with the Cavaliers was supposed to be, you know, maybe the final piece to putting together the more deep roster, the deepest roster in the NBA in terms of the playoff teams and in terms of a potential matchup in the finals with the Warriors. The depth of Deron Williams at point guard and then the big rim protector, not a huge offensive threat, but a big shot blocker, a very good passer in the offense, a very good screen setter, the kind of guy who could really, really have helped the Cavaliers was supposed to be the final piece. Walked in and walked out at almost the very same time. What an extraordinary disappointment for LeBron James. Kyrie Irving was pretty emotional about it after the game as well. And certainly you feel terrible for the big Aussie, for Andrew Bogut.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, that's just crazy how sometimes weird things like that can happen. From a Cleveland perspective, Bob, the only thing that even comes close in terms of you get a guy, regardless how much you're paying him, there's a little bit of name recognition, and he literally gets hurt on minute one. The only thing I can even come close to thinking, this didn't even happen in a game. Remember when the Browns signed LaCharles Bentley about a decade or so ago?
Yeah.
First day of training camp, and he busts his leg all up, and he's never was heard from in the NFL again. That's the only.
Well, it wasn't busting today. His leg up that did it.
It was staff infections, actually.
Right. It was staff infections. He contracted from within the the facilities of the Browns. It was the staff infection which threatened not only his career, it ended his career, but it threatened his life.
Yeah, for
a
brief time.
It was a very, very serious thing. He never got to play down.
Yeah, and that's about the closest thing I can think of, because it's just astonishing. You know, 58 seconds. Let me put it to you this way. Scanning for highlights and various things as I do to put together a montage, that inevitably at some point leads me to YouTube. And somebody put up a 3-minute video of Bogut from, you know, the layup line before the game, you know,
right.
How teams do.
Yeah.
And literally titled it, "This is Andrew Bogut's stint with the Cavaliers." And that's all it was him in the layup line. I'm like, that's sadly true, though. But I'm just astonished that something like that could just happen in that blink of an eye. And it hurts the Cavs' depth that we've overall been talking about, how they have pieces all over the place that they could go 11 deep. So now it's 10, and that's when everybody else is back healthy. But it is.
Although they're not going to stop with this. I mean, the chances are they're going to go ahead and waive him or buy him out or whatever has to happen and create that roster. Well, no, he's on injured list, so they get that roster spot anyway.
Yeah. If he's on that kind of list, then they should have that kind of a roster
spot. Which means they still have a possibility of filling that with another big, you know, and they were talking about some other possibility street free agents like Sanders before the Bogut deal was done. So chances are they're not going to just go, you know, 10 deep, if you will. They're going to find another big and hope that they can give him some valuable minutes.
And that's a good
not,
name
not to the
pick.
Level of Bogut, but certainly, you know, they're not going to just let it go unresponded to.
Yeah, no question. And that's a good name you bring up, the Larry Sanders, who was with the Bucks a couple years ago yeah. and then kind of just walked away from the game. He did have a workout with the Cavs. Yeah, that's a good name to bring up, Bob. Cavs fans, keep your ears open. You might hear that name a little
that
more
wouldn't
over
surprise
the course
me
of the next
at all if that
so.
Happened. By the way, your layup line thing, I saw a better one. My favorite one on Twitter last night was, and I don't remember who did it, but somebody tagged me, tagged me into it. But if you're a Simpsons fan, you'll get this. And I don't know if you are Jim Cushman or not. You are?
Yes, especially the older it is, the more I'm a fan of it.
Okay, so. Well, that's what I'm talking about here. This is one of the older ones when Bart was working. Bart damaged some property. And Simpsons fans, you gotta bear with me on this. You're gonna like this. Bart damaged some property on what he and the rest of the neighborhood kids thought was a haunted house where a witch lived. Turned out to be the Springfield Burlesque House. And he damaged the property. And he was sentenced, if you will, to go and work off his, you know, his damage that he did to pay for it. So he's working the door. And what was sent to me last night, which it said, here's Andrew Bogut's Cavs career, was sent to me on Twitter last night. Grandpa Simpson walks through the door whistling, turns and hangs his hat on the rack, turns and starts to walk in. Sees his grandson, turns and walks out, picks up his hat, and is out the door.
Never broke the whistle either.
Never broke the whistle, never broke stride. Oh, it's there's Bart. And then he pokes his head back in and says, did your father know you're working here? Yes. And then he bolted. Nice. That was Andrew Bogut. He walked in, he hung up his hat, he turned around, picked up his hat, and walked out. That was Andrew Bogut's career with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So now the question, of course, comes from an analysis perspective, and we're going to get some analysis from Rick Nolan here in about 10 minutes. Does this affect the Cavaliers' status as the NBA favorites to repeat? Now, I'm going to acknowledge that most people, based on the way this season has been going, most analysts who don't have a, you know, who don't see things through wine and gold colored glasses, would have said that the Warriors were the favorite to win the NBA title this year, not the Cavs to repeat. But that was before Kevin Durant went down. And Kevin Durant's status, of course, still being in question, to me, coupled with the Bogut and Williams additions, made the Cavaliers the NBA favorites now to repeat. Does the Bogut exit as quickly as he arrived change that? And and that's what we're going to ask Rick Nolan. But to me, it does have an impact. It really, really does, because this team, well, quite frankly, is still trying to figure out how to put everything together with the new pieces that they got. And then, of course, the guys on the bench who are playing a lot more minutes than they would otherwise if Kevin Love was healthy and if J.R. Smith was healthy. And since neither of them are yet, there are a lot of questions. And I think Andrew Bogut could have really, really answered some of those questions from a depth perspective, from a front court intimidating presence perspective. And so I think that the scales might have been tipped here because of that.
I'm not sure how much the scales have fully been tipped in this favor. I mean, it certainly helps, say, the Warriors, for example, that the Cavs aren't as deep.
Well, it helps everybody. It helps everybody that isn't the Cavs.
Because until they maybe go get somebody like a Larry Sanders, it puts Tristan Thompson back into the only quote-unquote rim protector kind of a role.
And he's not a rim protector. He's not a big shot blocker.
He's a Dennis Rodman-like rebounder. That's what he is. He is not a shot blocker, a rim protector. About the only silver lining, you mentioned some of the injuries. Maybe we could ask Rick Noll about this, too. I'm hearing some grumblings that JR may be back a little bit sooner than we expected. The sooner the better.
Last thing I saw was
well.
Maybe 10 days away, possibly.
That's not a week or two earlier than I thought it was going to be.
We'll certainly ask Rick Nolan about that when we get him on the air coming up here in about 8 or 9 minutes. Let me get Andy in Perrysburg on the air first, though, because, well, he's already there waiting on the phone lines. Andy, how you doing, my friend? You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good, Bob. I've been following you around the dial since 04 or 05, and I like your show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem. I can't subscribe to this notion that the stations are, at ESPN and your station are pushing out today that Kawhi Leonard is in the MVP race or that Andrew Bogut matters. First on Kawhi Leonard, you know, he is a very good player. There's no doubt. But to me, the MVP, the real MVP, as Kevin Durant would say, is the player that you want on your team in the playoffs in clutch time. And there is no doubt in my mind, if I'm the GM of a team, the one player I want on my team is LeBron James. He is the most valuable player in the NBA, and I'm a Pistons fan. You know, Kawhi Leonard for my future, he's younger. Would I want him long term? Absolutely. But the one person, the MVP, the person that can change a game both ends of the court, who can put up 40 or 50, get you 15 rebounds, 10 assists in a seven-game series every night if he wants to or if you need it, that's LeBron. In terms of Bogut.
Okay, no, hold on. Let me respond to that one first, then we'll get to the Bogut thing. I don't dispute what you just described at all in terms of, like, who you would want on your team if you're trying to win a championship or whatever the case might be. I don't dispute that, but to me, this is just simply comes down to what do you see as the MVP. If you see it as who do you want on your team first, then you could say LeBron every single year. I don't see MVP with the letters MVP the way a lot of people do. To me, the MVP, year after year after year after year, means MOP, like they give in the Final Four. It's the most outstanding player, and that means POY. It's the player of the year. It's the player who had the best season. That, to me, is what the MVP started out as. And then people started dissecting it semantically. All right, true value. Well, if this guy's team didn't have as good of a record as another guy's team, how valuable was he truly to his team? The other guy had to have been more valuable. And we start dissecting it that way, or the way that you just did. Who's the guy you really want on your team if you're trying to win it? And to me, the MVP is an individual award that is given to the guy that has the best year. And that's the way I think. You know, how do you think Derrick Rose won the MVP 5 years ago? Derrick Rose won it. He's never going to be anybody's first pick to be a championship winner, you know, or it, as you just described, a guy that you want to build around. But he just had a remarkable year. To me, Kawhi Leonard is having, along with Harden and Westbrook, probably one of the three best years. And the reason I throw Kawhi into the conversation, it's not because of ESPN. I don't take my marching orders from anybody. These are just my opinions. It's because he is the closest thing to LeBron in terms of playing the game on both ends of the floor in an amazing way. That series last night, that three and then that block of Harden, was very LeBron-like. Even Popovich said after the game, he said, what sets Kawhi apart isn't the three that he hit. Lots of guys can hit threes. It was the block, and not many guys on the other end can do it that way. And the first guy that jumped into my mind, of course, is LeBron, as we saw, you know, with Iguodala in the finals. So to me, Kawhi is a very, very similar player to LeBron in that regard, who is having, overall, a much better year than LeBron in terms of statistics, his team, and what he means to it. So to me, the Player of the Year award is what the MVP is. And that to me is Westbrook, and it's Harden, and it's Leonard. And I probably would have kept Durant in that conversation because of the crazy way he was playing. And LeBron. Those are probably the five guys as far as the Player of the Year award, which is to me what an MVP truly is.
Okay, Bob. I'll give you that. I'll give you your Player of the Year. I'll take my LeBron and meet you in the finals. But that's okay.
There you go. That's fine. Now what about Bogut?
Bogut. I don't think Bogut could help the student princes win the Ohio Athletic Conference. he is not material.
That's cold, man. That's cold.
It's true. But he played for the Warriors. I think I don't know if they shipped him out or didn't resign him or trade him, but they let him go. I mean,
they let him go because they had to clear space. They had to clear salary space for Durant. That's the only reason they let him go.
They had to clear space, but you know, I mean, if the Cavs were hoping on Bogut push them over the top, I mean, that's not much to pin your hopes to. I think they are a better team than last year because of the Ashton Kutcher lookalike, the Wally Szczerbiak lookalike, Kyle Korver, and because of Williams. I think those two in a fast pace. I think the Cavs will get to the finals against the Warriors in an up-tempo, high-scoring game.
But did you watch last night the way the Miami Heat were able to work them? First of all, from the outside, because they were just red hot for two straight games now. The Heat has just torched the Cavaliers from outside. But it's also because they drove by guys like they were standing still, and they went into the lane without fear. And the reason is there's never a brick wall there. That's just one of the things. It might seem like a small thing for the defending champions, but they didn't have, and then it looked like they were going to have, and now they don't have again, and that's why I consider it a factor. I'm not saying Andrew Bogut was going to be Wilt Chamberlain or Lou Alcindor or Paul Mokeski. I'm just saying he was going to be a guy that was going to be a defensive presence around the rim so that when guys get beat off the dribble, as Kyrie sometimes, maybe frequently, does, as Kyle Korver does, as guys get beat off the dribble and go inside, they've got to have a second layer of defense there. And quite frankly, every team has a flaw, and that's a Cavs flaw that I think could have been corrected had Andrew not broken it.
I'll spot you that too, Bob. Have a good day.
You got it, brother. Appreciate the call. Yeah, I'm not saying he's a Hall of Fame caliber guy or anything of that nature. I'm just saying the Cavs have a flaw, as all teams do, and they could have corrected their flaw with that guy, and now that guy is not there. And that's why I think it matters in that regard. Let me get a quick time out here. Rick Nolan coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
To the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, look at that. I lasted longer than Andrew Bogut did. I made it through an entire segment. How about that? No, I don't mean to be mean. That's really, really cruel. I feel terrible. I feel terrible for the Cavaliers. I feel terrible for Andrew Bogut. I feel terrible for David Griffin, who pulled off, I thought, a masterstroke of being able to improve this team without giving up any major pieces at the trade deadline. He added Kyle Korver, obviously, the addition of Darren Williams to give you depth at point guard, then the big rim protector. I mean, I thought it was a really masterstroke, and now the Cavaliers, of course, have to figure out how, and this is the strange part about it, they have to figure out how to do without something that they never even had, but they anticipated having. And I think that's why you heard a little bit of emotion in the voice last night from Kyrie Irving after the game, after Andrew Bogut's career began and ended with the Cavaliers in a span of 58 seconds. Joining us now is Rick Nolan, NBA beat writer out of Cleveland. Rick, how are you, my friend?
Doing well, Bob. How are you?
Well, can you miss something you never really had? Is that possible?
It was such a kind of a bizarre night. We had just talked to Andrew at 5:45 outside the Cavs locker room, and he was upbeat. He was cracking jokes. He was professional. He was realistic of what his role was going to be here on some nights and what it was going to be on others. He was just really happy, and you could sense kind of a happiness around the whole organization. Their roster was complete. This wasn't a savior, but he was the final piece that gave them, the ability to play just about any way they wanted to play, fast, slow, small, big. And then just like that, he goes into the game and it's over. And you kind of got the realization that it was over, the moment it happened. You knew this wasn't, a little bump or a twisted ankle, it just didn't look good. And then that confirmation came, and just like that, his Cavs career is for all intents and purposes over. So, through a freak thing. So,
yeah, it was.
Just an interesting night all the way around. The team, the air in the arena, it just went dead. There was stone cold silence. I think if one heartwarming thing came out, if that's the correct word, is that you could actually tell that the Cavs were legitimately affected by it, that they were really down over a guy that they had barely met, getting hurt so quickly, and they never really recovered, from that. So, interesting night to say the least.
Yeah, I just had a caller say, what are you worried about this for? This guy wasn't going to help this team win the title. This guy, it would be, just kind of a piece, a part, of a team that was already going to win the title or not. He wouldn't have been an impact. And to me, what I said to him is what I'll say to you now and get your thoughts on it, is that every team is flawed. The Warriors are flawed even when Kevin Durant was there. And he's out, and we don't know how long he'll be, if he comes back for the playoffs or not. But they're flawed. Everybody's got a flaw. And one of the flaws the Cavaliers had, I thought, was exposed last night by the Miami Heat. Offensively, the Heat had their way with the Cavaliers. When they weren't just hitting, ridiculous numbers of threes, it looked like the Cavs against the Hawks a few nights before. They're driving by unmolested and without fear some of the guys with the slower feet on the defensive end. We know that guys can get by Kyrie. We know that guys can get by Kyle Korver. And there's no wall standing there at the basket that provides resistance when they get inside. That's been a flaw for this team. And Andrew Bogut was going to be the fix to that flaw. Is he Dikembe Mutombo in his prime? Is he going to block 4.5 shots a game? No, but he's going to be a presence that changes the way teams attack him, attack them in the paint. And when you feel like you've added that piece, and he also is a very important part of the offenses he plays on, not because he's going to score 20 and 10, but he sets picks as well as anybody in the game. He is a good offensive rebounder. He is a very good passer out of the post. When you think you have those things, you know, fixed, if you will, to the flaws that you have, and then suddenly, well, we still have that flaw now because the fix is gone, you kind of can see why they would be deflated.
Yeah, it makes for boring radio, but I agree with everything you just said. What he was more than anything else is he represented something that they lacked. Nobody expected 20 points. Nobody expected 5 blocks. Nobody expected even 10 rebounds. They just expected a professional player who wanted to win another title, who understood what his role was going to be, and gave them more than anything else a guy between the ball and the rim, who, if he didn't block a shot, might at least alter it or challenge it or make somebody even think a little bit more about going in there. And they never got a chance to see how it would work. I've always liked Bogut as a player. I think he's always been underappreciated, and much better in, you know, areas that don't get a lot of attention, like you said, be it setting screens or just moving the ball. And beyond that, even Bobby is just such a good guy and such a good teammate, that I think he would have been, he was already, you know, hugely welcomed on this team that had just met him. They knew what he represented from the last two finals. And I think they had an appreciation for all the unsung, underappreciated things that he does on the basketball court. Just a really, really sad thing for him, even more so than the Cavs. You want guys like him to succeed, and, you know, there's a chance that this could be the beginning of the end for him.
Yeah, very much so. That's a very, very distinct possibility.
And that's even sadder. So hopefully, you know, I don't think he's coming back here. He's going to be a free agent. His injury has is, you know, it's one that takes months, way more than weeks, to get right again. But hopefully somebody, you know, with a solid team will pick him up next year. I'm sure they will, you know, at least for a couple more years. But you know, he's getting to that stage now, it seems, where if it's not one thing, it's another. And, yeah, and once you start going down that hill, sometimes it's hard to stop.
Let's talk about the impact on the team now and the race, if you will. With roughly 20 games or so left in the regular season, everybody's kind of gearing up now. And I think pretty much most of the season, the Warriors have been everybody's odds-on favorite to win the championship, especially the way they were playing with Durant. And, you know, the Cavaliers widely believed to be coming out of the East, and I don't think that really has changed too terribly much, except for the favorite part. Number one, I'm not certain that the Warriors are going to be able to hold off the Spurs, who continue to have a remarkable year under the radar because, well, they're the Spurs. They're just expected to be really good and put up 60 wins and all this stuff all the time. But they very well could catch and pass, now just 2.5 behind the Warriors, which, of course, you know, in the playoffs, if it came down to a series, could be, you know, a big deal in terms of home court. But I thought with Bogut and Williams additions, once Love, assuming Love and J.R. Smith both come back healthy and themselves, the Cavaliers had surpassed everybody as being the favorite to win the championship and repeat. Does the Bogut arrival slash departure immediately change that fact at all? And do you think they will stand pat now, or are they going to go ahead and maybe they worked out Larry Sanders, for example, who's been kind of on the shelf for a couple of years? Do they look for another street free agent to bring in and try to play some sort of a role in the big man department?
Good question. I think that's something that David Griffin, if you saw Griff's face last night when the injury occurred, you could just tell he knew, oh my gosh, I just thought I had everything I wanted. And it's gone. So no doubt he's asking himself those same questions. the options are limited. In fact, in my blunt opinion, I think the only option is Larry Sanders. You know, there's a Varejao and a Sullinger and some other guys out there that they could bring in, but none of them are true legitimate centers, and more than that, they're not shot blockers. So
right.
Sanders is the one guy that I think could still provide them with something that they don't have, being that rim protector. And I think, you know, quite honestly, if we were basing this just on pure talent and basketball ability, at the moment, Larry Sanders might actually be better than Andrew Bogut was. He just didn't have the professional resume, professional outlook, and the ability to, or the experience of going through deep playoff runs. But Larry Sanders could be a really good player for this team if he's right, and you know, that's a big if given his history. As for, you know, who's the favorite in the league, I don't know. If I had to bet my minimal life savings, I think I'd still put it on Golden State and Cleveland in the finals, but I agree with you fully that I think the gap between San Antonio and Golden State has closed considerably. You could make the argument, excuse me, that the gap is also narrowed between Boston and Cleveland. The caveat being the Cavs are going to get better when JR and Kevin Love get back. I think sometimes we tend to forget that, you know, they're playing without two high quality starters. So I still think the Cavs are going to emerge from the East. What happened in the finals, I don't really have a real good gauge on that right now, because there's some issues with this team that have been lingering for a while. They really, other than the Atlanta game where they made the 25 threes and still almost blew a 20-point lead, they've had some really bad offensive games lately.
Big time.
Last night at LeBron and Kyrie scored 62 of their 98 points and took 47 of their 78 shots, and nobody else scored more than 8 points. So for all the depth and roster flexibility people like me have talked about this team having, it hasn't really shown up consistently on a night-to-night basis. And their defense at times, I don't think atrocious would be a strong enough word. Their guard.
To what do you attribute this, Rick? Because I've been sitting here watching it, just my eyes are bugging out of my head. Like, are you kidding me? Nobody stepped over. Nobody came from the help side. Nobody is going to give these guys resistance. And I'm not just talking about the unconscious shooting they were doing really the last two nights that they played the Cavaliers, talking about the Heat. But again, all the drives to the basket, the offensive rebounds and putbacks, it's as if there is no commitment to defense whatsoever, which if this is November, you kind of say, well, they'll get it together. But it's not. You know, we're in the second week of March now, or about to be, and this is concerning.
Do you remember I can't remember who did it. It was either Dragic or DM, but there was a play last night where a guy dribbled from middle of the floor, 8 feet above the top of the key, went all the way left around two defenders and went all the way to the hole, and there wasn't anybody within 10 feet of him when he got to the basket.
I saw it,
Which is, it's unfathomable. I think it's two-pronged. Number one, they fall into this mistaken notion sometimes that their offense, when it's gelling, they just think they can outscore everybody. And they've played a lot of what should have been blowouts, rest everybody in the fourth quarter games, and the games that have come down to the last 2 minutes because of that. I think they've also just lost their focus a little bit, and we are now in March, where you should be gearing up to get to your peak into the postseason, and it seems like they're going a little bit in the opposite direction in that regard. I think the last two games against Miami, I think the Heat was 34 of 69 from behind the three-point line.
That's ridiculous.
And they weren't, for the most part, very hard shots. They were catch the ball, line up the laces, set your feet, high the basket and release it type looks.
There were a lot of that Ellington had last night that I thought, wow, that looked.
He's just a really good shooter. And then
quick release and off the turn. You know, I mean, so there were a couple that were a higher degree of difficulty, but for the most part, you're 100% right.
Yeah, I think the bulk of the problems start with their defense in the backcourt. And the starters are Kyrie and Shumpert, so it starts with them. Kyrie has shown that he can pick it up a little bit in the playoffs. I don't know what's going on with Shumpert right now. He is, in my opinion, playing himself completely out of the rotation when J.R. Smith comes back. He's likely to go from a starter to a guy who hardly ever plays. And I can't fault that if that's what Ty Lue decides to do. He's not even fighting over screens anymore. He kind of does what Kyrie does so often, which is get to the screen and then kind of take a big step around it and trail his guy all the way to the basket.
And that was kind of his calling card on when he got here. You know, he's not going to be a guy who gives you a ton of offense, but boy, he's a very good perimeter defender and on-the-ball defender. And if you don't have what you're known for, if you're not doing that, and you haven't improved at anything else, then you're right. You're pretty much playing yourself to the bench.
I agree. And we talked before that whole notion that he was a great defender was largely, I think, a New York City media creation to begin with. It's what you label a guy who's not very good on offense a lot of times. Yeah. Where JR got the rap as a bad defender because he was a shooter. And quite honestly, he's a much better defender than Iman Shumpert.
I agree.
You know, some people will argue that tooth and nail, but you watch this team night in, night out, and you look at the looks that Iman Shumpert's guy gets on a lot of nights. He's not doing his job right now, and quite honestly, neither is a guy like Channing Frye, who when he's not making three-pointers, doesn't provide you much else.
That's very true. Very true. He's a guy who I think has been pretty disappointing. I mean, there are times when he'll get hot from out there and really help. But you're right. When he's not making those, he's not making other plays to give you something else to keep him on the floor. You know, that's what I try to tell young kids that I coach all the time, too. Look, if your shot isn't on, then you better find another way to contribute or you're going to end up sitting over there next to me. You better be rebounding. You better be blocking shots. You better be locking down something to say, hey, I might not be scoring, but this is how I contribute to the win. And and he doesn't do that very well. Right now. So the whole defense as a whole is very disappointing. Hey, Rick, I only got a few minutes left. Jim Cushlin's been here with his hand in the air, and I better call on him before it falls off. Jimmy, go ahead, buddy.
You know, thinking of these little injuries you're talking about, I guess kind of a two-part question. One, I've been reading some interesting things in the last 5 days or so on J.R. Smith and when his status being back maybe in the 10-day kind of range, which feels like a week or two earlier. And the other question, Bob and I kind of kicked this around in the opening segment, with Bogut done, is there any chance the Cavs attempt to go back to the buyout market? Maybe a Larry Sanders, for example, who was interviewed and worked out.
I think
with the
you
Cavs
missed that part of our conversation, Jim. We had that conversation in the middle there. You were probably answering phone calls.
Fair enough. Yes, I was. Fair enough. Well, the first one, though, what is the status of JR? I've been reading some very different things because given everything that's going on, bad offense, funky injuries, just bad play right now, they need some of these guys to come back soon. What is his status?
I think he's closer than people realize. He was out playing a 3-on-3 game last night at the Q a couple hours before tip-off with James Jones and DeAndre Liggins were playing, and then they had a couple, you know, the team attendants who were former college players playing with him as well. He still has a small wrap on the thumb, but I don't think we're too far away from him practicing. And practice is going to be limited, but they don't play till Thursday, so I'm assuming they'll have a good workout tomorrow. Wouldn't be totally mind-blown if he takes part in portions of that. They got 3 games on the road coming up here, and then they're home for 2 middle of next week. I wouldn't be totally shocked if he plays in one of those. I think their next home game is a week from tonight. In fact, I know it is. It's my birthday, March 14th. I wouldn't be totally shocked if he plays in that game, or if not, then soon thereafter. And I think Kevin Love, who also did a decent amount of agility work and got some shots up and was, you know, moving imaginary C-cuts before he caught the ball and shot it at shoot-around yesterday. I think he's right on schedule for you know, end of this month, beginning of April. So I think all signs are positive for those two guys being back as anticipated.
So both of them should be back from their injuries probably by about the time you break that next hip, right? Are we close to the... I had to get a birthday shot in there somewhere. You know that. I had to throw that in. Hey, last thing, Rick Nolan, and thanks so much for your analysis of all of this stuff. We certainly appreciate it. Kawhi last night did a LeBron impersonation at the end of that showdown with Houston. I don't know. You were right, and obviously you covered
the game. I saw the three. I saw the block. I saw the rebound.
Just how much did that remind you of LeBron a little bit in the finals, you know, especially with the block on the other end at that tremendous, go-ahead three? Not that it was identical, obviously. LeBron hadn't hit a three. But, I mean, the offensive end, the defensive end, the intensity, the fact that this guy has ratcheted up his scoring to the point he's a 27-point-a-guy night. He's a very good three-point shooter, averaging just a shade under 40% from three. There are some who say that, you know, in addition to the Harden and Westbrook thing, that this might be a Kawhi Leonard award to consider by the time we're done.
Yeah, I love the guy. I think, you know, he's MVP worthy, but I think he picked a bad year to to really win that. I was actually thinking, Bob, before I came on, and my top six in the MVP voting from Donnie, I think I'd put KD six. I think I'd put Kawhi or LeBron 5 and 4 interchangeably. Actually, I forgot somebody. Isaiah Thomas would be my fifth.
Okay. Kawhi or LeBron 3 and 4?
Kawhi or LeBron 3 and 4. And then I go Harden 2, and he's had a phenomenal year, and they're winning a lot, and that will help him with some voters. But if a guy averages a triple-double on a team that doesn't have a ton of talent around them, and they're still in the battle to be even as high as a 6 or a 5 seed in the West. If I had a vote, and I don't, I would right now have to cast mine for Russell Westbrook.
So you seem to agree with me that the MVP award is really more of a Player of the Year award. I had a conversation with a previous caller who said there's no way, because it's got to be the guy that you would want on your team if you had to win a game right now, blah, 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 and it's the whole, hey, LeBron's the best player in the world, therefore he should be the MVP kind of a thing. And I said, you know, yeah, if you define value in that way, that people will break down semantically most valuable player. But I've never seen the MVP award as that. I've always seen it as who had the best year. The MVP is the Player of the Year. That's what it is. Who had the best year this year? And that's got to be Westbrook.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it was strictly emphasis on the V in valuable. LeBron would have won it the last 10 years.
Right.
But
so, it's not.
No, and LeBron's a victim of his own success and his own greatness, where you know, his numbers have actually gone down, and he's probably, you know, more valuable than he's ever been. So, you know, just they're 4-20 without him since he came back, for crying out loud. You can't prove your value much more than that.
Right. But that's why, like, I said, I think people misread most valuable player. I think it's always been called that, but it was just the way of saying, you know, this is the best player. This is the guy who's played the best this year. If you're the MVP, that's why I love that in the Final Four, they call it the MOP, the most outstanding player. It's not necessarily the guy that was the most valuable to his team, blah, blah, blah. But if you're the MVP of the tournament, the MOP of the tournament means you had the best tournament. If you're the MVP of the league, you had the best year in the league. And that to me is what it ought to be. And I think if that's the case, you're spot on. It's got to be Westbrook and Harden 1 and 2. Although Kawhi, the way he is doing this, I'm telling you, if he has a final 20 games, you know, the way he has had kind of last night, honestly, he may crash that party.
Here's a quick side note for you. Kay Felder got D-League. They call it Performer of the Week, which struck me really as odd. It's like, what do they sometimes give it to a halftime act? you know, do they have something other than players win it that they call it Performer?
I like that, because obviously it's D-League, so it's not about value. If you had a whole lot of value, you'd be up at the parent club, right? It's about who performed the best. I get that. That's kind of cool. And Kay Felder averaged about 30 points a game, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And what that tells you, more than anything else, and this is no disrespect to Kay Felder, is that there is a vast, vast, vast difference between the D-League and the NBA.
Absolutely.
I always go back to Luke Herangode, going down from a lousy Cavs team to the D-League and immediately putting up, 18 and 9.
Yeah. 4A players. It reminds me of the late Andy Marte, you know, the guy who was way too good for AAA pitching, but not quite good enough to hit big league pitching.
Yep.
That's where you
yep.
sit. Good stuff. Hey, Rick, thanks for the call, for the time, my friend. I appreciate the conversation. We'll talk to you again soon.
All righty. We'll
have
talk
a great
to
one.
You.
All right, let's get to SportsCenter now, right here on the Ticket.
Ellington missed it. Rebound to the leaping White. Second chance for the Heat. White was tripped by Bogut. We got tangled up, boy, with the ankle.
Oh, boy.
We're down in a heap. And Andrew's just been injury plagued throughout his career since that horrific fall with Milwaukee about 6 years ago. I don't know if he was kicked there. Could you tell?
Oh, yeah.
The knee, right
the knee.
To the shin. Yeah.
Right to his shin.
Man. I mean, that's just bad luck there. So Bogut just 2 minutes into his camp stint.
I think of my shin.
All the way here. Nothing on this leg.
I don't like the fact you can't put weight on it.
I can't catch a break.
It's very deflected. Tough moment. You know, we're excited, you know, about the acquisition and bringing him here. And, you know, him getting some games under his belt, you know, before the playoffs. It's a tough one, not only obviously for him, first of all, you know, and then for our ball club.
Like on TV that he had maybe told you and some other guys while he was going off the court that he thought it was broken.
Yeah, I heard it.
You heard the injury?
Yeah.
I heard it crack.
Understanding how excited he was to be here kind of took the wind out of our sails a little bit because I think he knew right away. And we're just hoping that he gets better. Hey, it's terrible, man.
Reggie floats it up, fills it up. They trim the lead to 10. Reggie with a crossover, and he fires, and he fills it up. Reggie from the corner. He hits it.
Defense was there, but it didn't matter. Reggie Jackson.
Reggie knocks another one down. Look out.
Shots are just dropping. Teammates doing a great job setting screens. Their coverage is allowed for us to play a two-man pick-and-roll game. I was just a beneficiary of great ball movement, great spacing, and a great defensive effort tonight.
Well, he was certainly efficient 10 for 10 in the second half from the floor. I mean, you know, it didn't get much better than that. Yeah, he finished that up damn well.
Here is the drive and a find for Loft, right corner. Three ball is good. Back to West, left side, working on Navigato. One dribble, pull up, got it for two. West to Alsager, 14-10, Toledo. Back to the middle to Alsager. Shoots over Navigato on the dribble and shoots and scores. West Alsager getting in a rhythm. John Williams bounces it to Sanford, left corner. His three ball is good. Here's Fry with a shot topside for three, and it's good. And he shows the three to the crowd. Dylan Fry, that little step left triple, and we're tied. Williams brings it out top, shoots a long three, and fills it up. Alsager contested, but a little bit late. And Toledo by four. Rockets get it in, and right away go to Kanapke inside. He works around Alsager, counts the basket, and the foul. Left side for John Williams. Skips it over to the right corner. Loft, catch and shoot, triple. Got it. Off the inbound, the Rockets get it to Williams on an out-of-bounds underplay. Taylor found it for a layup. Now Taylor feeds it inside the Loft, working against Fry. He scores low on the right, and a foul. Williams, Toledo, gets it to Navigato. Missed the dunk. Loose ball. Loft has it for Toledo. Got it to Williams underneath. Shot fake. Goes up and under his scores. Caldwell to the lane, to the rim, and good. Nobody stepped in. 61-42. Rockets starting to pull away. Now Williams again launches late in the clock and fills it up at the right point. And that is going to do it.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And hour number two is underway right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Sorry for the late start. We had a long hour number one as we had a good conversation going on with Rick Nolan about the NBA. So what do you think? On whose side are you in this argument of what the MVP really means? You know, we're 20 games in, roughly, or 20 games out, I should say, from the end of the regular season in the National Basketball Association. And, you know, for the most part, I think the arguments have been made, the cases have been made, numbers have been compiled, statements have been made, and I mean that on the court, of course, not literally, but all of these things have gone on. We know what Russell Westbrook is doing. We know the historic nature of what he is doing and what he could potentially accomplish. We know what James Harden is doing. I mean, just to kind of give you some specifics on these things, as we talk about the MVP of the National Basketball Association, and I want your thoughts. It started, of course, with what Kawhi Leonard did last night, and it's just got a lot of people talking about his place in this conversation, and rightfully so, I think. Kawhi Leonard is doing some remarkable things. I have never been as high on him because as great of a defensive player as Kawhi Leonard is and has been, for my money, he just wasn't a consistent enough offensive player to be considered one of the top 5-6 guys of the NBA, in the NBA. He has changed that, has Kawhi Leonard. There's no question about it. He has changed that. He is now, without question, one of the top 5 or 6 offensive players in the game. He's averaging 27 points a game, for crying out loud, almost 28. That's got him almost tied for 5th in the league. Hold on, let me get the exact number here. Kawhi Leonard is averaging, hold on 1 second, we'll pull that up for you here. Kawhi Leonard is averaging 26.3, so it's almost 27, 26.3 points per game. That has him 7th in the league. Russell Westbrook is on top with 31.7. Isaiah Thomas from Boston, who's going to get some votes, but he's not going to win this thing or not going to finish top five. But he's averaging 29.5 points a game at 5'9", which is simply ridiculous to think about. And he's doing it with some amazing shooting accuracy. He's a 38% three-point shooter, a 91% free-throw shooter, and, yes, even a 46% field goal shooter. At 5'9", to be able to do that inside is really an amazing thing. James Harden at 29. Anthony Davis, who's going to get some talk as well, and rightfully so. We need to talk about him. He's 4th in the league in scoring at 28.1. Then DeMar DeRozan, 27.6, which is amazing because nobody talks about DeRozan. And then we go to DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis' teammate, who's averaging 27.2. And then Kawhi Leonard, who's 7th, who kind of bypasses all of them because of his tremendous all-around game. Now, I just want to throw the three top contenders at you and let you compare the numbers first, and then we'll talk about, you know, comparing the guys whose numbers aren't quite the same, but perhaps their value or their performance is better than statistics can indicate. First, Russell Westbrook. Let me just say this about that. He's very, very dangerously close to falling out of what has made him the favorite, and that is the season-long triple-double quest. Right now, as of today, and Russell Westbrook takes on, and the Thunder take on Portland tonight at 8 o'clock, by the way. Russell Westbrook is at 31.7 points, 10.6 rebounds, and 10.0 assists per game. He is within one-tenth of an assist, in my opinion, of losing this race. In my opinion, Russell Westbrook, whose team is right now 7th in the NBA West in terms of its playoff positioning, Russell Westbrook cannot win the MVP unless he makes history and sets this record or ties the record that Oscar Robertson said back in 1962. He set that mark as the only player in NBA history to average a triple-double for an entire season. There have been a lot of guys to come and go that people said might be able to do that, the most recent of which was, that's right, LeBron James. When LeBron James came up as a rookie and averaged, I don't remember if it was around 25 points and like 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and then the next year that went up to like 6-6, and the next year 7-7, and he's been kind of in that ballpark pretty much his entire career. People have said, if anybody can push that 7-7 up over 10-10 and average a triple-double, it would be LeBron James. Well, that never happened, for whatever reason. That's not a criticism. It just didn't happen. Russell Westbrook has been there all season long, all right? He has played now in 63 games, so he's got 19 left, and he's at 31.7, 10.6, and 10.0. If he finishes with the triple-double average, I think the odds are probably 60-40 that he wins the NBA's MVP. And I think the voters will wait until the final statistics are in. Very few, at least I hope very few of them, cast their votes early, as they are kind of known to do. You know, a lot of times in baseball, you'll see guys with the Cy Young Award ballots cast and their MVP awards cast and their Rookie of the Year awards cast and their Manager of the Year awards cast before the season's even over, sometimes a week, 2 weeks in advance. And that's a problem for me. Let's see how the whole thing plays out. But particularly this year with this guy, if he finishes as the second player in the history, now think about that for a moment. There's 12 guys on an NBA roster, and that roster turns over as new rookies and free agents and so on and so forth come in and people drop off. Thousands and thousands and thousands, I don't know the number, since this league had begun, thousands and thousands of players have played this game since Oscar Robertson did this in 1962. I mean, we're talking 50 plus years, right? 62 to 2012 would be 50 years. Yeah, 55 years. And nobody has done this. Lots of guys have won, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, about what you would rather do if you were a player and you could choose one NBA championship in your career, one is all you get, or be one of only two guys in history to average a triple-double for an entire year. Which would you take? And it's entirely possible Russell Westbrook would rather have this than a ring. I'm not suggesting he doesn't want to win at all. I'm being legit, though, when I say that when Kevin Durant left, I don't think Russell Westbrook cried. When Kevin Durant left, Russell Westbrook knew that he had the whole show now, and he could do whatever he wanted with his show, and that means pursue things like this. And it's remarkable to see that they're even, with the talent surrounding him, or the lack thereof, that they're in the playoff chase. They're in the seventh seed right now. But I truly believe that that seventh seed will be his undoing in the MVP race if he doesn't finish the year with that trip dub. If he falls to 31.7, 10.6, and 9.8, sorry, not going to be good enough. Now, I don't mean that literally it's not good enough, but it's not going to be good enough for the voters to give him the award over a guy like Harden. James Harden is averaging 2 points fewer than Russell Westbrook. 2 points. Not a big difference. It's one more basket a game. He's averaging 11.3 assists. That's 1.3 assists more than Russell Westbrook. And as a 6'5" point guard, he's averaging 7.9 rebounds. So let's round that to 8. So he's averaging about 2.7 rebounds fewer than Russell Westbrook. But what does James Harden have going his way? The Rockets are the third best team in the West, in large part because of what James Harden, formerly a teammate of Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City, are doing. If you think about this, James Harden is carrying a roster that is not a whole heck of a lot deeper and better than the Thunder's roster to a 44-win season thus far. Hold on, let me pull up those standings again. Right now, the Rockets stand at 44-20. They are the third best team in the West, and that's by a lot. Utah's the fourth best team, 4 games behind them. All right? In the loss column, in the win and loss column. You got Golden State at 52-11, San Antonio at 49-13, and then the Rockets. And as I mentioned, the Thunder are down there at 35-28. So if you look at, truthfully, the Rockets roster, I'm not saying it's garbage. It's not garbage by any stretch of the imagination, but it is nowhere near as I'm going back on these things. I'm going back and forth between Harden and Westbrook. The Rockets roster is not garbage, but it is not filled with all-stars either. In other words, James Harden is taking a bunch of guys that are probably, without him, a marginal eighth seed in the conference, if they're in it at all. And he's put them in on his back and made them the third best team. Russell Westbrook is taking a marginally maybe seventh or eighth best team in the conference overall, and he's got them at the seventh or eighth best spot in the conference. That's it. So to me, what Harden is doing is more impressive than what Russell Westbrook is doing. Which brings us, of course, to the argument that I was making before. Somebody else called early in the show and said, you know what, neither one of those guys are the guy that you would pick to win yourself a championship with right now. Neither one of them. The only guy that you would say, if you had your choice of anybody in the league to pick help win a championship right now, you'd pick LeBron James, the best player on the planet. Therefore, he's the MVP. That is probably true, but That is not what the MVP is supposed to represent. The MVP, in my mind, isn't supposed to be who would you start your team with right now, because that could be the same guy every year, even if he's injured. What if LeBron, who is a guy that you would say you would start your team with right now, had missed 44 games with an ankle or a knee or whatever? You'd still say he's the best player in basketball, but he's not the MVP this year because he didn't have the best year. To me, the MVP has got to be the guys that's had the best year. That's what it means, player of the year. And that has got to be one of the two guys I mentioned, or the third guy, Kawhi Leonard. I don't want to totally dismiss guys like Anthony Davis, who is also having a ridiculous year at 27.3 points a game. No, I'm sorry, 28.1 points per game, excuse me, and 11.8 rebounds per game. I don't want to discount his accomplishments. But again, the Pelicans are not exactly a world beater either. And it's not his time. It's just not his time. Kawhi Leonard, however, may have made this his time. Not to disrespect LeBron James and his 26 points per game, his 8.8 rebounds, or beg your pardon, assists, and his 8.2 rebounds. That is a remarkable line, and in a lot of years, that's the win. That's the Player of the Year award. But it's not, because A, LeBron James has kind of poisoned the well water himself a little bit. He has kind of been so successful and had so many monster seasons. That one, when compared to others of his MVP seasons, probably pales just a little bit. That's part A. Part B is that voters have indeed gotten LeBron James sickness syndrome, the same way they did with Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan did not win nearly enough MVPs. He didn't. They got bored, so they gave one to Barkley. They got bored, so they gave one to, I'm trying to think of other individuals who won them. I think Allen Iverson once. You know, they got bored and gave the MVP award to guys that just weren't Michael because it was boring to give it to Michael. And LeBron has to face that too, which again brings us to the guy that I'm just celebrating a little bit because of what he did last night. And the fact that last night wasn't all he did, it just gave people a reason to talk about him, and that's Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard, never one of my favorites, and by that I mean simply I just didn't respect his offensive game enough, has made himself into one of the very best offensive players in the NBA. He is a dangerous, dangerous player from beyond the arc. His three-point shooting percentage is at a career high. Let me pull up his full stats and compare them not just to other players in the league, but to himself. This guy's only in his, what, sixth year in the league? He's only in his sixth year. Kawhi Leonard went from an 11.9 points per game player in his second year to 12.8 his third year, to 16.5 his fourth year, to 21.2 last year, to 26.3 this year. You talk about a quiet ascendance to the top of the mountain. A guy who's about as humble as an athlete as there is. Have you ever heard Kawhi Leonard talk? And when I say talk, I don't mean trash talk. I mean just talk. Talk about himself. Talk about his accomplishments. Talk about his game. He just kind of continues to do what he does in the anonymity of San Antonio as a part of the Spurs machine. But he has slowly taken his average from a rookie year 7.9 to his sixth year 26.3 and increased his shooting percentage by virtually the same numbers every year. He is now up to, in field goal shooting, he was last year he was a 50.6 field goal percentage shooter. This year, 48.7. On a lot more shots, 15 a game a year ago, 18 a game this year. That's a lot more shots, three more shots a game times 82, 240 more shots. He's only dropped off about a percent and a half in his field goal percentage, which is still among league leaders at 48%. He's made himself into a very efficient three-point shooter, 38.5% from the line behind the arc. And at the foul line, he's a 90 percenter. Throw in six rebounds, throw in four assists a game, and throw in the NBA's two-time Defensive Player of the Year, and you have Kawhi Leonard, who might very well be having the very best season of any of the guys I mentioned in this league thus far. So I heard a really interesting thing, because we're not going to be able to decide on a single MVP yet. We got to see 20 games play out. But there was a really good conversation this morning on ESPN. As I watched them argue about the all-NBA team for this season. You can only have five guys, but you've got seven or eight that you could say are having all-NBA caliber seasons, right? You can certainly say that Kawhi Leonard, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden, as I've mentioned, are all NBA caliber. You say that about LeBron James. You can say that about Isaiah Thomas. You can say that about Kevin Durant, who shouldn't be penalized because he went down about a week or so ago with an injury. He was having an MVP caliber season, let alone first team All-NBA. You might say that about Steph Curry, but I won't. You can say that about Anthony Davis. These guys are all having All-NBA type seasons. Only five of them will win that, will be honored as All-NBA players. Which of the five do you keep? More directly, which of the two or three in the top eight do you leave off the first-team All-NBA ballot? So that's just something to think about as we kind of tear through all of these numbers and try to break down what they all mean. Again, with about 20 games, 19 games left in the regular season. All right, got to get a timeout here for about in the Sports Center. Hey, have I told you, and if I haven't, that's my mistake because I want to, excuse me, as we are, of course, full-on into championship week, about the million-dollar bracket challenge. It goes until selection Sunday, and it starts tomorrow at ESPN 106.5, the ticket. You got an opportunity to win $1 million in the tickets million-dollar bracket challenge. For now, head on over to our sister station's website, WXKR.com. And register. After selection Sunday, you'll be able then to go back and enter your bracket picks for a chance to win $1 million. Good luck to you from us and from your friends at TAS Electronics and ESPN 106.5, the ticket. So a very, very cool opportunity there for you. Million-dollar bracket challenge as we are full-on in championship week, selection Sunday. Now, of course, just 5 days away. All right, got a lot of other things to talk about. I want to get you involved in as well at 866-240-1065 coming up on ESPN 106.5, the ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Just threw it up on Twitter for you as well during that break as we heard a little SportsCenter and more. Check it out for yourself. Follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5. And also on Facebook at 106.5 The Ticket. Just threw up the names that were kicked around on ESPN, as I mentioned, about the All-NBA guys. There's seven guys that are listed, and you got to pick five. Which two would you leave off of the All-NBA team? And if you want to get on the phone lines and get in now at 866-240-1065 and answer, we'll do that. Also, who do you think is the league's MVP this year with 19 games roughly to go? Is it Harden with all of his crazy stats? Is it Russell Westbrook with the triple-double average? Is it LeBron James, best player, 26 points, 8-8? Or is it Kawhi Leonard, best player, most complete player on both ends, not named LeBron James, for a team with a much better winning record? And obviously, you know, a guy who has just kind of become renowned for his clutch time heroics. If you want to get in, we will take your thoughts again at 866-240-1065. The other side. Excuse me, the other, not side, but the other issue to talk about today, we didn't spend a lot of time on, and we should, since today is the first day you're allowed to tamper. Isn't this the goofiest thing, by the way the NFL handles this? We're talking about all of the player acquisition in the NBA as far as, you know, the Bogut story and everything else. But it's time to stock rosters in the National Football League. Tampering begins today, or began today, as you know, at which point players are able teams are able to talk to players and start working out contracts, even though they can't sign them to any contract for a couple of days, but they can start tampering now. And it's one of those things, I heard Greeny say this morning, it just sounds like it shouldn't be. If you are it just can't be legal. If you are tampering by definition, that makes it illegal. If it is legal, well, then you're not really tampering. You're negotiating with people, excuse me, that you're interested in. But there are so many different moving pieces and parts in the NFL right now. The quarterback position is an absolute mess. Is Jimmy Garoppolo really going to be moved by the New England Patriots, or are they going to keep paying him a ton of money to sit there and be Tom Brady's backup when Tom Brady has shown no signs whatsoever that he is going to be slowing down and retiring anytime soon? In a very weird way, it's reminiscent that, and this is just a sidebar to the big story, it's reminiscent of the Brett Favre-Aaron Rodgers scenario, isn't it? Just a little bit. It was toward the end of Brett Favre's career, and Brett Favre kind of gave hints that he was going to retire. And so they drafted Aaron Rodgers, very, very highly touted quarterback out of Cal. And then Brett Favre said, okay, I'm going to play one more year. And Aaron Rodgers is forced to sit and learn from the bench. And then, okay, it's going to be Aaron Rodgers' time, and Favre is like, yeah, I'm probably going to retire. All right, Aaron Rodgers, ready to go. And then pretty soon, late in the process, all right, I'm going to come back one more year. And he did this for the last two, three, 4 years of his career, and it really ticked off the Packers. I mean, they were upset with their legend, their all-time quarterback, the record holder and everything else, because he just wouldn't get out of the way for the young guy. And if he had made it clear that he was still going to be able to play at a super high level, maybe they wouldn't have drafted the young guy. And this way, it's in this story, it's a little bit similar, except for the fact that Brady hasn't hinted that he might be ready to retire, making it necessary for Bill Belichick to get the next guy. Brady has said over the last 3 or 4 years he wants to play another 10 years, which is crazy because he's 40 now, and you can't expect this guy to be playing football at the age of 47 or 48, at least not at the level he is. The only guy who did that was George Blanda, and that was as a field goal kicker, not as a quarterback, but mostly as just as a kicker. So you can't really expect this to continue, can you? Well, it's Tom Brady, and considering what he did at age 39, had an MVP caliber year, even though he didn't win the award, as we know, went to Matt Ryan. Who knows how much longer he can do this? So Garoppolo, it looks like they're going to hang on to, and that means who is the number one free agent prospect at quarterback? Is it Mike Glennon out of Tampa Bay? Because they're offering to make him a $14, $15 million man to be the backup to Jameis Winston. Either that or this is just what they had to show their fans, so they didn't let him walk away. But he's going to be a free agent, and Mike Glennon is very highly touted by many who might, you know, think that if he's going to make $14 or $15 million to be the backup in Tampa, we might as well give him $14 or $15 million to be our starter. Teams that might be in that mold include the San Francisco 49ers. They include the Chicago Bears, and yes, it includes the Cleveland Browns. Could he end up in one of those cities? And then, of course, beyond that, you do have the Tony Romo question mark. Is Tony Romo going to end up in Denver? All indications are that John Elway, seeing the success he had by going after Peyton Manning toward the end, but not at the end of his career, but a guy who was coming off of significant injury problems, and of course, it was the neck surgeries that made him expendable by the Colts in the first place as they drafted Andrew Luck. But here was a guy who overcame his injuries and ended up leading the Broncos to 2 Super Bowls, winning one. And John Elway feels like, hey, you know what? The pattern is set. It's been drawn. The template has been laid out. I can do this. I can go get a top-flight passer in this league near the end of his career, but not at it yet, who's been injured, who becomes available perhaps because of that injury. And that is exactly what happened. In Dallas, that's exactly what happened. Dak Prescott only got the opportunity because of Tony Romo's injuries. And so he can still play the game at a high level. So I'm going to go ahead and pick him up, add him to my already one of, you know, defense, which is already one of the top defenses in the league, and see if we can repeat it. Capture lightning in a bottle twice and go back and Tony Romo being the new Peyton Manning. The difference, of course, being Peyton Manning was one of the all-time greats. Tony Romo only has one playoff victory. But still, on a team with the kind of defense and the personnel that they can surround him with, Tony Romo to Denver seems like it very well could be a lock. And that brings us then, of course, to just a couple of other names. Where's Colin Kaepernick going to wind up? And I could care less because he is a man of no character, and I wouldn't want him anywhere near my football team. He stands for nothing. If a man will stand for nothing, he falls for anything, and he is not somebody who will stand for principles. He caved in, and I know this doesn't have anything to do with his passing or his running ability, which, of course, has fallen into great question since his breakout season 4 years ago. But to me, the guy who made a bigger name for himself as a protester than as a player, giving up that protest now because he's a free agent and he wants to make money, okay, I won't do it anymore, is a guy that stands for nothing. So I don't want anything to do with Colin Kaepernick. And that brings us down to the three draft guys, prospects, who are considered to be first-round potential. And that would be Notre Dame and Toledo Central Catholic's DeShone Kizer, obviously Clemson's DeShone Watson, and the very, very prior to this season, unknown Mitch Trubisky of North Carolina. Now, he is well known to some in the Cleveland area out there in Cleveland because he's from Mentor, which is an eastern suburb of Cleveland, and that's where he played his high school football, and he was an all-state player, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, I think he was Mr. Football in the state of Ohio 4 years, well, 3 years ago it would have been. No, 4 years ago, I guess, because he did redshirt. But Mitch Trubisky's only started 13 games for North Carolina, but he has shown an incredible amount of promise and one of those great high ceilings that scouts all like to say, and he's going to be a first-round draft pick for somebody. The question is will that be for the Cleveland Browns? Are they going to take a quarterback with either pick number 1 or pick number 12? That's anybody's guess right now. Conventional wisdom is that if they are truly in love with one of those three guys, they're going to have to take them first overall, because the Bears could very likely take the one that they are in love with at three. The Niners could very well take the one that they're in love with at two. And they may be left with, you know, the second or maybe even the third of their, you know, on their own personal draft board. And by the time they pick at number 12. On the other side, not too many people have either one of those three rated good enough, or any one of those three rated good enough to be the number one pick in the draft. That he's not worth that kind of money and that kind of, you know, an expenditure of assets. That they have to take the best player in the draft with that top pick asset. And that probably isn't one of those three guys. And then hope that the third, the one that they like the best of the three is available when they pick with their second first-round pick at number 12 overall. I don't know what they're going to do. I think they would prefer to solve this in the free agent market with the likes of Garoppolo and then just be able to take the best players at 1 and 12, truly impact players, as opposed to last year's strategy that they employed of trading every high draft pick they had for multiple picks in lower rounds, and then getting 14 players in the draft, but none of them are impact players. I hope they want to take impact players this time around, and that is something we have to keep our eyes on as well. So obviously the free agent market getting underway with at least the tampering days allowed now, and it'll be interesting to see over the next 48 hours which guys are set to go to which teams, and then we'll have a better idea of what the draft could shape up to look like. Okay, that's it. That's all the time we have. The music is playing. Thanks so much for being a part of the show, and thanks to Rick Nolan for a really fun conversation on the NBA and the sad story, really sad case of Andrew Bogut last night out there with the Cavaliers. That's it. Stay where you are, because Drive Time is coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.